This has been Sunday School with Sean. Everybody's all set to have their spiritual awakening.
You should read some of the infant gospels, Sean.
Welcome, everybody, to the Skippy Fanny Show.
Each breath you take is a sin. No shadow will be safe again, for you will be hunted by angels.
I have like extra pause in there to make it ominous.
I try.
He's channeling Paul Bettany.
You weren't confusingly Italian and Spanish at the same time.
I didn't even want to attempt an accent.
Anyway, I'm Sean.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Julia.
And on this live Torture Cinema show, we're discussing 2006's The Da Vinci Code, based on the book of the same name by Dan Brown. The film was directed by Ron Howard, scored by Hans Zimmer, and it stars Tom Hanks, Audrey Tautou, Ian McKellen, Alfred Molina, Jürgen Prochnow, Paul Bettany, Jean Reno, and the Louvre.
Jean Reno.
I apologize.
He's a very famous French actor, and he was also in some other movies like The Professional, etc.
That's right, he was with a young Natalie Portman.
With a tiny Natalie Portman. Big. A movie that, as I get older and older, I'm like, wow, that movie is very inappropriate. Just like, the older I get, the worse it seems, and I'm like, I think it's very bad, actually.
Yeah, it's been a while. I don't know. But could it possibly be as bad as this movie, you think?
I think it's a better movie watching experience from the standpoint of, like, it's written better, it's paced better. But it's, like, really gross on the sort of, like, a fully adult older man and a, like, 12 or 13-year-old girl are supposed to have kind of a love relationship.
That's creepy.
Yeah, it's really gross.
Yeah, too much. Nah, that's... I hadn't really thought about that. That almost feels like sort of like basically Nabokov's Lolita, but with
it
guns.
It is very much like that, and it is not okay.
No, that doesn't sound good at all.
I haven't seen that for decades. So.
Probably for the best.
Yeah, me neither. And then I started reading about it a couple of years ago and was like, oh, yeah, you know, that's not actually cool.
That's not good. So... this movie was selected by our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/skiffingfanty, who gave us both the votes to pick this movie from the four, but also gave us the poll theme, which was financially successful movies that suck. And it is worth noting that this movie cost approximately $125 million to make and had a box office of approximately $760 million, so a very profitable movie.
It is the biggest grossing movie for Tom Hanks.
Wow. Oh, no. Poor... Really?
That's what I was reading on Wikipedia, and I was like, I can't believe this. Like, this man has been in Toy Story and all these other things, but, like, apparently this movie made more money than everything else.
Except the Catholic Church.
Did they make money on this?
Oh, the Catholic Church hates
this
movie.
Well, I don't mean off the movie, but...
they had a
just
lot
in
of,
general.
They had a lot of, like, upset people trying to ban it and successfully banning it in a lot of countries, but not the Philippines. In the Philippines, the Catholic... there's a group of people who tried to get it banned, and then they wouldn't do it. And they were like, no, we'll make it restricted to 18+, but we won't ban it.
That does make it harder, though. That's basically, like, their version of NC-17, I guess.
So. Yeah, but, like, in a lot of places, it was just not shown. Like, in China, it was released, and then the Catholic Church in China got so mad that they just pulled it, and you couldn't watch it. And in Iran, it was never released. In a lot of countries, like, in Jordan, it was never released, et cetera, et cetera.
Many of those will ban a lot, though.
But, like... I don't... Okay. So, like, the end of this movie, nothing changes.
But
so,
it's
like, why are they mad?
Super blasphemous.
I mean, yes, but also it's total fiction. It's not real.
My favorite thing, though, about this is that so Tom Hanks was asked whether he thought that it should be banned or how he felt about the bans. And he said, like, I mean, you know, it's a lot of hooey. Nobody believes this. It's like a fun scavenger hunt. And then the follow up was like, how does this affect, like, you didn't struggle with your personal faith, you and your wife, knowing that you're making this movie that's this? And he was like, no, because we've had our sins removed, not our brains.
That's right, he did say that. Oh, Lordy.
As always, please share your comments with us about this and past episodes at skiffyandfanty.com/listener-suggestions. Though, if you continue to suggest movies like this, your sins of that will not be forgiven by me. thanks, folks, for this one.
Yeah.
And if you're live with us today, feel free to throw thoughts and questions our way.
Absolutely. Okay, so, as always, we have a what are you drinking section for Torture Cinema. There are no requirement that beverages be alcoholic, but you may have an alcoholic beverage if you so choose. As a reminder to follow Twitch rules and, of course, to be responsible adults, if you are imbibing of the alcoholic variety, please drink responsibly. Do not drink and drive. I will note, I live in the state of Minnesota that also qualifies for token the ganja. So, please also, if you are doing that legally because you are of age and can consume that and you enter a state where it is legal, also don't get behind the wheel of a car. Stay home, be safe, and don't overindulge. With that in mind, Daniel, what beverage are you drinking?
I have a pair of beverages. I have St. Arnold's Brewery's Fancy Lawnmower, a refreshing outdoor beer, though I think it still tastes swell even indoors. And then with that, because I need something a little more hard for Torture Cinema, and this one in particular, I have a mix of B&B, Benedictine and Brandy, along with some Crown Royal Black.
That sounds possibly too fancy for this.
B&B on its own is just way too sweet, even though it's Benedictine cut with Brandy to cut down on the sweetness. I need to cut it down even more. And the Crown Royal Black has, like, extra alcohol in it, too, so that's a benefit.
Nice. Good job.
And Benedictine is a nice little nod to the religious theming that we have going on here.
I hadn't even thought about that, but you're correct, yes.
I am rocking the double hydration non-alcoholic version. I have the It's Raining Cats and Dogs theme of my Rocket Bike Cat water bottle, and that's full of water, and then I have my Noodle the Pug Treat Yourself It's a Bones Day mug full of herbal tea, so I can get hydration two ways, because wow, I'm gonna need it to get up my energy for ranting about this film.
Fair. And I guess that comes to me then.
Yeah, what are you drinking, Sean?
Okay, so I decided to make something themed for today. I will note that this used to look like dirty bath water. It has mellowed out considerably in the time it was sitting in the freezer. So it more looks like just a very dark brown liqueur, which does make sense because most of what went into it was. But there was something that was purple that went into it. So, but I have been, I'm going to butcher the words for this, but I have called it hors d'oeuvres prétentieuses, which is French for pretentious garbage. And so what is in here, I'm going to forget, because I basically made, like, you know when you go to a fast food restaurant and you go to the soda thing and you just put a little bit of everything in it? I took everything out of my liquor cabinet that had a vaguely French-sounding name and put it in here. So in here is creme de violet, creme de cassis. I've got a cognac that was French, specifically a French cognac. I cannot remember which one it was, by the way. Girard, I think it was. There is also creme de noyau, which is like a French bitter. And I've got Vion in here as well, and a little bit of Sprite, which is not remotely French, but we can call it Sprite to make it sound French. Yeah, so I will tell you, if the creme de violette was not in here, it might be okay. But the creme de violette gives it a floralness that is not pleasurable. If anything, I might even say that this is, I could call this the Opus Dei or Dos Pretensus. Oh, because it feels like I'm being punished.
This is a creme de violette that's actually the flower?
Yeah, creme de violette is a liqueur that's distilled with violets, and it's sweet. So, you know, it's like all liqueurs, it's a sweet thing. I actually like the flavor, but I think you need to balance it properly, and that doesn't sound like you did.
No, I will say it has mellowed out considerably because I put it in the freezer. I made it. I tasted it, and I went, I'm not going to have more than one of these, so I'm just going to wait till it's time. But the creme de violette, to use the correct pronunciation, does go reasonably well in a cocktail called an aviation, which is a bit more of a almost like a martini, but with that floralness of the violet. So there you go.
Yeah, an aviation is this, really nice.
Yeah,
but that's not what you have.
No, I honestly, now that I think about it, I should have just had a French Connection cocktail, which would also have been themed, but I wanted to be able to say something in French that made me sound like I was sophisticated, just like in this movie, even though I'm not, because it's nonsense. So there you go. So that's what I'm drinking. You're welcome. It's not great. I'm sorry, guys. It's really not.
That's the prize you can get for the 13 points.
That, yeah, it's right.
The recipe,
13 points
the
you
recipe
can get
for hors d'oeuvre prétentieuse.
Hors d'oeuvre prétentieuse. Yeah, there you go. You can get one of these delivered to your house by pony.
Oh, come on. We can afford unicorn.
No, you can't. Nobody can afford unicorn. They're endangered. You know this, Daniel.
I thought we had one in the Skiffy and Fanty stable, though.
Well, that's true. We do happen to have one. Okay, well, in seriousness, we got to talk about this movie. So, If I recall, Daniel has volunteered himself to summarize this movie briefly, and he did tell me on the Discord that it was going to be incredibly perfectly accurate while also being short. So what is this movie about, Daniel, for people who may not know?
Or I had a hard time figuring out what it was about too, beyond the level of
I can help you if you.
Yeah. Okay. So a group and an assassin are after some secret, and are trying to kill Tom Hanks and others, and they're after something that turns out to be the Holy Grail. That's actually a person, and it involves the Priory of Sion somehow that I think was protecting the Grail. I don't know.
Okay, so like this is based on the novel by Dan Brown, Robert Langdon, Tom Hanks, professor of symbology from Harvard University, is roped into a war between two different factions. The Priory of the Zion is one, and they are indeed trying to protect the Holy Grail, which is in fact a person and turns out to be Amelie from the movie Amelie. And she is she thinks she's the granddaughter of somebody who was in the Priory, but actually he was just protecting her because she is actually the actual descendant of Jesus Christ. This is why many church groups are very upset about this movie and want to ban it. There are many hijinks that ensue over a 24-hour period where they try to figure out the keys to this puzzle and solve little puzzles as they go. And Ian McKellen figures in, and it's unclear whether he's good or bad.
It is worth noting that the book it's based on itself borrows from some actual biblical conspiracies.
Okay, so fun fact about the Priory of Zion. This was invented by a dude in like 1952 or something like that. It's not that old. He invented it in the 50s, and then like a few years later, possibly in the 60s, he was like, you know, actually, it's really old. Actually, I borrowed it from somebody who made it in 987. And really, I'm doing it so that I can get Merovingians back on the thrones throughout Europe. So he started spreading those rumors, even though that was not what he originally said. And he invented it in the 50s. And then in 1982, some random people wrote a book that was a conspiracy theory where they, to this man's surprise, because he did not say this, were like, oh yeah, actually it's all about Mary Magdalene having married Jesus and having his descendants and they exist. And then Dan Brown wrote this book as though this was actual history and possibly has said that he thinks it is actual history. It is very confusing to me.
You did do a lot of research.
I've gone down this rabbit hole too.
You got to go down rabbit holes when you find them.
Yeah, so the two big books, Julia is referencing one, which is called The Holy Blood and The Holy Grail, which is by Michael Beigent or Beigent, Richard Lee, and Henry Lincoln. And then the other one is called The Templar Revelation, Secret Guardians of the True Identity of Christ by Lynn Picknett and Clive Prince. The second one, The Templar Revelation, is the one that Dan Brown mostly got stuff from, because this is where, like, there's that, remember that scene? So Daniel will remember because we watched it live, but I'm sure, Julia, you remember. There's this random scene where, like, the grandfather is just, like, having a weird ritualistic sex scene, and there's no explanation of it. Well, that's because it comes basically from this book, which suggests that Mary Magdalene had, like, ritualistic sacred sex with Jesus, like, kind of, I suppose, to some degree, like what we see in the story. And there may be other implications about possibly not just single monogamous relationships of sorts. And so in the book, there's more about it. But in the film, they just, like, throw this out like people are going to know what the hell's going on. But the implication is, like, this is how the line's being kept alive, is they're just doing ritualistic sex things between descendants of Mary Magdalene and Jesus in order to keep perpetuating the line. There's just no explanation.
So how is there only one left then?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions I have. Does the cult, like,
stop having their ritualistic sex?
They always kill off everyone in the generation except for one.
Or every Friday the 13th, the Pope or Jason comes and just massacres all the descendants. I don't know.
Just like the Templars were. Yeah, and Julia is also very correct. The Priory of Sion was, in fact, invented in 1956 by Pierre Plantard. He wanted to create a prestigious neo-chivalric order. It has since been found out to be what they call a ludibrium, which is a Latin word for an elaborate hoax in the form of an esoteric puzzle. So this is probably where Dan Brown gets the idea, the completely nonsensical idea that you're just going to leave these puzzle pieces and that's it. And I remember in the chat we were watching it live, I was sitting there at this moment when, why don't they just destroy the next piece in the puzzle? Because then once it's gone, you can't find the next thing. Because the whole thing is like you have to follow the pieces because there's no explanation. She's being trained by her father, grandfather, uncle, first cousin, also brother, who even knows what his relationship is, to be, like, able to find the clue. But then it's like, but why do you need the clues? I don't understand. What are the clues for?
I think it's revealed that he's not related to her at all. In the end, in the end, her maternal grandmother is like, I gave you up so that you would be protected by him, like, as a member of this priory, but not, like, because he's related to you. It's a very confusing movie. Yeah.
It is fun, though. I kind of wish it was true. But, you know, anyway, that's a whole other problem. I mean, some of it's kind of fun. Like, I don't know. It makes Jesus more interesting, at least, I'll just say, than what the church gives us. Sorry, no. I know I'm going to be burned for heresy on this point. But, like, look, I'm sorry. I have a hard time believing that, like, there's this gap in Jesus's history in the Bible. And, like, during that whole time, he was just a totally normal dude that did not in any way have any serious relationships with anyone. Come on, horseshit. That dude went on dates. You know, he was like, walked over some lady's house in his little sandals and was like, hey, would you like to go out on a date? We could definitely go down and look at the sunrise. And he was doing that. And then at one point he became a carpenter. And then, like, I guess God came down and, like, spanked him on the butt. And he thought he was God again.
This has been Sunday School with Sean. Everybody's all set to have their spiritual awakening.
You should read some of the infant gospels, Sean.
Should
just
I?
For shits and giggles, yeah. Just there's like stories of like bullies picking on Jesus at school, so he throws one of the kids off the roof, and then he feels bad, so he goes and resurrects the kid.
Yeah, like he totally like kills the bully, and then he's like, I guess I probably shouldn't have done that. I'll bring him back.
And I think he does I think a bird dies that he resurrects too in one of them, if not the same one. I don't know, but.
Oh.
Yeah, there's all kinds of fanciful tales that people made up to fill in the gaps.
That's good times. Well, look, I think we've got the basic idea of the story. Should we get to some likes and dislikes instead of me just giving you very terrible Bible history?
Please don't listen to Sean's Bible history. If you want to read up on the Bible, do that on your own. Do not take this as gospel.
I mean, you really shouldn't take religious advice from me at all.
I feel like
I will tell you.
We have to give this to follow the Twitch rules as a disclaimer.
No, I think that's allowed. I think I'm allowed to commit heresy. That, I think, is not a violation of the Twitch rules.
Are you allowed to start a cult?
I think yes, as long as it's not, like, doing anything illegal.
Oh, all right.
The problem is then, like, would people really think it's a cult?
Mm.
Right.
Yeah, good question.
I mean, like, so, if you told me, like, I have a cult and all we do is we just read books, they would just say it's a book club.
Mm-hmm.
But book clubs, theoretically, could be cults.
They could. I'm sure
if
there are.
If you had a cult, you'd probably say, I just like having people over for my book club. Would you like to join? We can give you some very interesting literature. Mm. It will change your life.
It's just like science fiction novels and like Goosebumps, you know, just stuff like that. Yeah.
Isn't that what L. Ron Hubbard did, basically?
It's basically, yes.
Now, before we get to the likes and dislikes, I actually have a question about the movie.
Okay.
And that's, I still don't quite understand why anybody cares about the stuff in the movie. Because if Jesus is not divine, if he's just some regular dude, and Mary Magdalene, like, married him and they had some kids, how do those kids matter at all? I understand the idea of, like, the Catholic Church trying to keep a secret because to maintain their power. But everything else in the movie just makes no sense to me of why there's this impetus. Am I missing something?
So I think that the two warring factions are the church, who want to keep it a secret at all costs because they don't want people to think that Jesus was not a divine person. And then the other side is Ian McKellen's side of things. He wants everyone to know that Jesus is just a normal dude because he thinks that that will stop people from doing wars in the name of religion, essentially.
That's absurd, because people will just do wars for whatever else.
It doesn't make, like, it doesn't hold up at all if you examine it at all, but this is okay.
That's the conceit.
You have to suspend your disbelief on literally everything for this movie, so that's just one more bit.
Okay.
Yeah, like, Ian McKellen says on multiple occasions, he yells out, like, something to the effect of, like, you need to free everybody, because the idea is that religion has clouded everybody's mind with a lie, and by revealing this, you will free everyone of the lie, which on the one hand kind of makes sense for his character, because he is this like obsessive holy grail dork who just hangs out in with his rich butler and like just stares at holy grail literature and has PowerPoints ready to go on the fly. Right. Which I respect, because it makes it seem like what academics do is this very glamorous and beautiful thing, and it is not at all.
No.
Like that. But on the other hand, he has like almost a childishness to how the reveal of this as being true with evidence would affect the world. And no offense, but you could have this revealed, like this Priory of Sion could come out literally in our world tomorrow and be like, yeah, Jesus and Mary Magdalene had babies and they were married and like they had like secret sacred cult sex and that's what they did. And no way, even with evidence, would that immediately upend the Catholic Church. There's just no fucking way. Like, I mean, for God's sakes, the Catholic Church has been caught doing legitimately evil shit in our lifetime, and it still has monumental amounts of power and its own country. So,
yes. Yeah. Well, just look at American politics, anything.
Which is kind of the frustration of the end of the movie.
But, like, basically, Ian McKellen is basically sitting in his little private mansion, constantly screaming into a void, saying, "Wake up, sheeple! Yes! Wake up, sheeple!"
Yes. He's sort of like, today he would have a podcast.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he would.
He'd be in the manosphere or something on YouTube. Oh, good Lord. Well, let's get to likes and dislikes, shall we? And since, Julia, you are returning after a long time away from doing this, I am going to punish you by making you go first with your like, please.
Oh, boy. This is a hard one. So my very simple like is that this movie was filmed in France and it really contained a lot of French language. There was a lot of French, so it's just scattered throughout the movie because there were French people actually speaking French and you had to either understand French or read subtitles in order to know what they were saying. And I appreciated that because if you're going to set a movie in France, it's kind of silly to have everyone speak English. So that's my simple one. My slightly more complex one is, can we talk about the just absolute rock star stamina that the man who got killed in the beginning of the movie has? Because this man somehow managed to, he's fatally wounded by Paul Bettany, and he manages to not only leave multiple messages in his own blood around the entire Louvre for people to find out that are all riddles that are like sentences long that he's written in his own blood. So he's like staggering from place to place, leaving messages in his own blood. He also then manages to carve a very accurate, and like, I don't know how he did this. I'm thinking about this and I'm like, I don't think I could do this to myself. He doesn't, like, did he have a mirror or something? This is pre-smartphones, really. He didn't even have a camera function to check the selfie mode. He carves an accurate pentacle on his chest. And this is what he decides to do with the end of his life. I don't know how he manages to have the energy, but, like, that man is amazing. Like, that's a miracle all in itself. I think that's the most miraculous thing in the entire movie.
I think what's funny about it is, at first, you're like, wow, he did a lot, you know, because when they find his body and we finally see him, he has drawn the perfect pentacle and the circle around him. And it's like, oh, OK, so like he wasn't as dead as we thought he was. And he spent a little time doing some like finger painting, which, OK, I could almost accept that. But then as we learn, as they're wandering through the Louvre, like he's left a breadcrumb of fucking clues, like, and not just like he didn't like put like his finger on something so that they'd find them. No, like fucking riddles and shit. Like
full
everywhere.
On full sentence riddles written in his own blood in different locations in the museum.
It's so ridiculous. And it's extra ridiculous because it's like he knows that the one of the people that's going to find him is either her or him or Langdon, I guess. For reason. And I'm like, how does he know they're going to show up? And he's just leaving these. But then I'm like, what if the evil Opus Dei guy played by Paul Bettany's beautiful ass? Like, what if he showed up and figured out the clues were there? Wouldn't he? What? You have a journal. Write in a journal.
Like Sean Connery did.
It's ridiculous, but it's also impressive. Like,
just, it is.
Apparently, as an old man, he does have the stamina of a horse. So, A+. Yeah. And they were in the actual Louvre for part of this.
Yeah. They were definitely in the Louvre. Yeah. Yep.
But the actual Mona Lisa was not filmed. They used a replica because they would not allow the lighting to be used against the painting because it would cause harm to the colors.
That makes a lot of sense. Movie lights are harsh.
But it does mean they got one of the legitimate replicas that must be put up whenever they're doing restoration or anything on the works. So, which is still pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah. And the Louvre is pretty gorgeous.
Yes. Do you like our pyramid, Sean?
It is a beautiful pyramid. It has both directions, right? The phallus and the sacred feminine.
They mirror each other geometrically, as Tom Hanks says.
Yep. I mean, he does. Okay, I'll get my like out of the way because it's kind of related to what we're joking about here, which is movies always do this where they glamorize what it's like to be an academic in a way that's like this beautiful fantasy like humanities academics specifically. Science is different because scientists, I'm sorry, Daniel, but you all become either evil scientists or like eccentric scientists. And yeah, it's a little stereotype.
Not glamorously,
like,
though.
Not very glamorous, yeah. But with humanities, like, it's always like thousands of people come out for their lecture, and it's this bananas lecture that goes perfectly exactly as you need to, and they always seem like they're super brilliant and smart, and the cops show up at your book signing because they need to get you to help them with the clues because you're the only one who could possibly know. And, you know, like, you get a guy who's just mysteriously mega rich and went to Oxford and lives in a French villa and just does Holy Grail research and makes PowerPoints for fun and, like, those kinds of things. Like, it gives this impression that what we do is it's literally like geeks, but sexy because they're smart. And that's not at all what it's like. And I just love it. Because it lets me dream about what the world could really be like. Like, people care mostly nobody cares about what Langdon says because he's talking to, like, cops who are just, like, not interested. But clearly someone gives a shit because they showed up to his lecture. And all he did was, like, here's a picture. It's not what you think.
And a book signing, right?
Yeah, and his book signing. Like, the parents of one of his students shows up and is like, I just want you to know my son loves your class and you're his favorite teacher. And he's just like, I already gave him a grade. Also, he violated the FERPA rights of the student just right then. I just want you to know. Because he did, in fact, announce the grade in public to people who didn't have a right to the grades. So, bad Langdon.
And that's the only thing that he did wrong in the entire movie.
I mean, everything else was really accurate. You know, I totally believe, well, now actually I do believe they would hire someone like this at Harvard because Harvard has fallen a bit, but that's a whole other problem. But anyway, I just like sexy academia is always just a really fun thing because it's just a fantasy and I get for a moment to dream about what it would be like for people to care what I do.
I love how the likes so far have mostly been, like, absurd, non-realistic things about the film that are also, like, not good.
Yeah, and Urbane Timing just gave us a follow, by the way. Thank you very much.
Aww.
I know you have to wait a few minutes before you can comment, but hang in there because we probably got a joke or two for you. But anyway, right. Daniel.
So what was your like, Daniel?
So my like actually was the same as yours, Julia, that I had thought of was, so I studied in France and worked there briefly at the Pasteur in Lille. And I was so happy to see a movie where they actually spoke French in the picture. So that's the one that I initially thought of. So I'm glad I had a little extra time to think by Sean giving yours. My my other like, I guess, would be the along those lines, the character that Jean Reno portrays, the cop. Through most of the movie, I was wishing the movie was just about him. That he just abandoned this case and move on to something else, because I found him really intriguing and more believable than any of the other characters, just in like how passionate he was about pursuing the truth and pursuing the case. And so I would have loved to have seen that movie. But I did enjoy him. Also along the same lines, while most of the actors and actresses I thought were terribly wasted in this movie, Ian McKellen was probably the one exception. Otherwise, I thought he made the most of his role and really did a tremendous job for not having much, but getting a fair bit of screen time at least, I guess.
Yeah, I assume he was just having a great time and like, I'm just going to eat this up and then collect my paycheck. Thank you.
And others didn't seem to do their thing, even if their parts were pretty lousy or the writing was lousy, they weren't using the same relish in what they were doing as he was. And so I
loved feel like him everybody for that. Else was taking it seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like Ian McKellen was like, I'm in a ridiculous movie. And everybody else was like, we are in a serious movie. Like Paul Bettany was like, I am 100% serious.
Yeah. And Audrey Tautou, I love her. I've loved her since I originally saw in Le Libertin, which is a French movie about Diderot and the Libertines. And then I saw Le Fabuleux Destin d'Amélie Poulain, which was because I love that director.
That's it's called
in English. They just called it Amelie.
Yeah. In French, that is the full title, is The Fabulous Destiny of Amélie Poulain, but in French. But in English, it is just Amélie.
Just Amélie. And I loved, I mean, I liked the director, but I really enjoyed her. In this, maybe because she's speaking English, not her native language, she just doesn't come across the same way.
I don't think it's because she's speaking English. I think it's because of the material and just like everything going on in this movie.
Well, honestly, also, I think Ron Howard. I really don't like Ron Howard, I think.
Ron Howard, who said he was very frustrated that critics kept giving this negative reviews. Very frustrated.
Well, we're going to get to dislikes in a minute. And I think we're going to get to some of the many reasons why this film got panned. I do want to note that I agree completely that Ian McKellen is just having fun. Because one of the things I saw today that made me think of this movie was this. It just came up my YouTube recs. It was Ian McKellen talking about, like, it was like some Shakespeare workshop thing he did in like the 70s or 80s or whatever when he was much younger, to like young actors, and like talking through a Macbeth soliloquy and just kind of going through like how to think about the words and make choices about how you act. Because he is, of course, a Shakespearean actor. And it made me think, like, the way he approaches talking, like, he's basically teaching young people ways of thinking about doing Shakespeare. It kind of reminded me of this role. Like, he's basically kind of a passionate teacher getting to do the thing that he really, really, really loves more than anything else. Obviously, Holy Grail nonsense in this movie versus, you know, Shakespeare, which I think he still very much appreciates. So I just like that it's almost like Ian McKellen, the teacher. They just like, we want you to be a teacher, and that's how it's going to work. And he did. Also a character with a disability, which I thought was really interesting, too.
A character with a disability who has lots of agency. You cannot say that he does not have agency.
I mean, he does do a switcheroo on us, so.
What is his nickname in it?
The teacher.
The teacher. That's
literally the teacher. Alfred Molina is like, I met the person named the teacher. I am mysteriously Italian and Spanish too. Sorry, we're going to have a conversation about the accents in a minute.
Are we on to dislikes?
Let's do dislikes. So, Julia, what is your dislike for this movie? Give us the good one.
My dislike for this movie is just how inane it is. I wanted to like it. I wanted it to be fun. And I just found myself constantly checking the time to see how much was left and thinking over and over again, you know, National Treasure is so much smarter than this.
Yes!
And so much more fun. And I was like, how can this one be so just kind of draggy and boring? When National Treasure is, I mean, it's equally silly. Nicolas Cage is like, we're going to go steal the Declaration of Independence. but that one manages to be, and I feel like, again, it comes back to, I think this movie takes itself too seriously. And I have not read the book, but I've heard from other people who have that they really enjoyed the reading experience because the chapters are very short. They all end on a cliffhanger. It reads very fast. And it feels like you're being pulled through and you're solving puzzles and it's cool. And the movie should have felt cool like that. But instead, it took itself too seriously. This whole church nonsense, which is very much nonsense, people were taking absolutely seriously. And everybody was playing it sort of like, aside from Ian McKellen, everybody else was in some sort of grim Scandinavian murder mystery with a big ethical dilemma. But this is a silly movie. You shouldn't be in that movie. You're in a silly movie. Have fun. So that is my dislike. My dislike is that this movie took itself way too seriously. And because of that, it was boring AF.
I think like the seriousness is also affected by like, the main, well, so there's like two villains, right? There's Alfred Molina. Well, I guess you could count Ian McKellen as like an antagonist of a sort. But you basically have Alfred Molina, who's not really the central villain, because the person we're following is Paul Bettany's Silas, right? Who is meant to be an albino monk, which, question mark, but sure.
Assassin,
yeah. But like, they give him almost no good, like, he has no Sam Jackson Bible quote moment. Right, where he just gets like really dark and scary and gets to really chew some good lines. They give all the good lines to Ian McKellen, basically, who is, of course, hamming it up and having a glorious time. But, like, even the serious bits just feel like they're just, it's like they're evoking seriousness, but they don't really want to, like, let it breathe as something that has character to it. He's just an albino monk assassin, and that's why he's scary. Not because when he shows up, like, he's creepy. Like, I don't know, maybe he just has, like, a lizard that is always with him that he keeps in a trunk, and nobody knows why. And he's always, like, quoting stuff in Greek, but it's never the actual Bible. It's, like, weird demonic shit or something. Just anything where he gets to be more. And all it is he's just, I'm sadless and I'm creepy. Go away, sister. And then he, like, assaults the church, basically.
Yeah, and it's kind of really disappointing, too, that they fell into the whole evil albino stereotype, because that's very harmful to actual albino people, who, especially in Africa, are often, like, really very much in danger because of being albino and likely to be killed, as people think they're witches, people think they're evil. Yeah. And this does not help that, you know?
It's not necessary for him to be, like, they want him to be weird looking, and that's supposed to do the work of making him evil. But I feel like the thing that makes him evil is, he doesn't actually look that weird. He looks Scandinavian. That's, like, he's just a very light-skinned, blue-eyed, light-haired, I mean, that's all he is. But, like, you can't just use someone's appearance. I mean, you can, but it's lazy. Use someone's appearance as the determiner. I don't remember if he's an albino monk assassin.
Because if it's lazy, I'd assume that, or that would be.
It's possible, yeah. But it just feels lazy.
I mean, I think he's also supposed to be. You're supposed to be unsettled by him because he is so much into punishing himself. He's constantly doing, like, self-flagellation and stuff on screen, which is very unpleasant to watch. And he's clearly into it. So you're supposed to feel like this is, like, an extremist, and you're not supposed to like him because of that.
But yeah.
And I think he's supposed to be a complex character because he's supposed to be really believing that everything he's doing is for good. And you're supposed to, like, feel that conflict, because there are points where people are like, yeah, your God actually punishes murderers. He burns them. And I think that's supposed to hit him harder, and he's supposed to have a genuine emotional conflict. But the problem is, this is not fundamentally a serious movie, and you're trying to make it so serious, but it is just, it's not working.
The seriousness comes a lot from, I think, just the nature of making it this big picture directed by Ron Howard and a vehicle for Tom Hanks. I honestly have not... I made the joke during the live watch that I don't think Tom Hanks has made a great film since The Burbs. And it's because I love the crazy, zany Tom Hanks. I dislike strongly all the movies he's done where he's won Academy Awards, because I find them just vehicles for awards. Overwrought, emotional, and this over-serious, and that he's just after awards. I love Sean's face now.
Sean but is about to just die.
I think this suffers from that more than any of the other movies do, because it shouldn't be serious at all. But I think it comes partially from that fact that Tom Hanks is going to make serious movies for Oscars as opposed to something zany and crazy.
I don't feel like Tom Hanks thinks this movie is an Oscar.
No,
winner.
He doesn't.
But I think he is being directed by Ron Howard to be gritty instead of silly. Because honestly, the character of Robert Langdon is really, as far as I can tell, basically another Indiana Jones. And that's how he should be. But instead, he's being played like he's like Wallander or something. Yeah. I don't know.
he is meant to be that, but it's weird because he's kind of a wet blanket. His only skill is he's just really good with symbols. And
the only thing that makes him human is, like, one flaw is he's afraid of elevators.
And claustrophobic. He's claustrophobic. Yeah. it's weird. Like, I just love the part where he's looking at the numbers and she goes, oh, so you have eidetic memory. And he goes, no, I just pretty much remember what I see. And I'm like, that's literally what that means. What are you talking about? I had to Google it because I was like, maybe I'm insane right now because I've just forgotten.
That's what
no,
it means.
He's a professor at fucking Harvard. He should know. How he dare know. You?
Also, there's a point where she tells him about the cryptex and he's like, I have never met a girl who knew so much about a cryptex before. And I'm like, buddy, you work at Harvard. You are right down the street from MIT. They do the mystery hunt every year, and you're telling me you've never met another geek?
No, he's never met a woman, Julia. What are you talking
about? I believe it.
I guess that was Julia's, your dislike. We got to yours?
My dislike is all about how serious this movie takes itself and how I dislike that.
Well, then I'll bounce off that because I think I can. I think the thing I dislike the most about this movie is partly how much it doesn't make sense, and worse, that we go through all of this shit of all this puzzle solving and all of this, like, guys killing people and being chased and shot at and, you know, double crosses and cross doubles and upside down crosses and all of this nonsense. And we get to the end and the reveal is given, and the reveal is just, hey, the puzzle's been solved. And nothing else. And that drove me absolutely bonkers. Because I just felt like, what the fuck was the point then? Like, if the point was, we just need to get her to safety, and the whole thing was all along, she's really important, but we still have to protect her, and so, like, get her to her people, and then the prior, whatever. Okay, that's fine. But that's not. The whole thing was, like, the big reveal. And then, worse, they reveal, like, the Louvre, where the two things come together for the secret cult meeting, is where Mary Magdalene has been buried, in the secret chamber that nobody has talked about in centuries. Are you fucking kidding me? There's no, like, disgruntled architect or fucking builder who was like, hey, by the way, there's a secret chamber underneath the Louvre. It just, no, none of that. So we get to the end, and nothing happens. It's just, the mystery is revealed, and, like, but, okay. So, like, where's the news story about this? Or, like, would somebody reveal? He doesn't even reveal it. He's an academic. The fucking guy should be writing a book. I'm angry.
That's the sequel.
Because the sequel, Angels and Demons, is a prequel. It's not actually a sequel. It's a prequel.
Didn't he write it first?
Yeah. Yes.
It was written earlier. Yeah.
But they made this one, but the other one takes place before
this one. Oh, the movie was made after. Did they make a movie of that one?
Yeah, they did. Okay. So they made this movie, then they made Angels and Demons, and then they made Inferno. And those are all Robert Langdon books. But Angels and Demons came before The Da Vinci Code, and then Inferno came later.
Wait, did they make Inferno? Did it have Tom Hanks in it? It does. I didn't even know.
It does, yeah. Apparently in like 2009, 2012, something like that.
But all of the other ones are him helping the Catholic Church. Because Angels and Demons, he solves mysteries for them. And then he, I guess, solves an antimatter threat involving plagues, maybe, with the Vatican?
Okay.
I guess? I don't know the exact order. So, sure. Like, so does this one just not count? Like, they reveal a whole thing that actually shows that the Catholic Church is fundamentally wrong on its doctrine. And thus is holding control over people over a lie that we now
and
know
he keeps
the Catholic
working
Church
for them.
And he's working for them and the other ones, and what? I don't like it. I hate it.
So what is your dislike, Sean?
I hate that nothing happens at the end.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's fair.
It's just you can't reveal this secret. Like, it's an entire thing. Like, the whole church is wrong. And it's been like, how do you take that, this reveal, and you just go, like, oh, it's just like a fun little factoid I found that I can keep secret, no big deal. No, the church has been lying knowingly for literally thousands of years about the nature of its doctrine in this movie, in this fictional interpretation of reality.
Okay. Sean?
And nothing gets revealed.
But I think the reason why Robert Langdon doesn't reveal anything is because he sees Sophie as a person and wants her to be able to decide for herself what she wants her life to be. So if he were to reveal that, it would put her again in danger and in a spotlight that she might not want.
But what about all the other people who are believing something that he now knows is demonstrably false?
Well, that's Ian McKellen's idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Robert Langdon is more concerned with Sophie than with everybody else.
Sean, this movie has effectively turned you into Ian McKellen's character.
Yeah,
because you now have your own podcast. You just have to. Yeah, you're on your own podcast now.
No, no, I'm not going to start a podcast and go on the Joe Rogan Experience.
Fully expecting that the next time I go to Sean's house, he's going to be like, "Before you can come in, I have to know what tea do you want, and do you take it with milk or lemon?"
That depends on the tea. Oh, Lordy. Yeah. Well, okay, Daniel, what about you? What is your dislike?
So one of my very general dislike was the length of the movie. I don't know if it was a factor of it being boring, but I think even without that, it was needlessly long. It was way too bloated. But a more specific one, I guess, would be the flashbacks. There were many flashback, or just Langdon would be talking, or Ian McKellen would be talking about some historical event, and all of a sudden the camera would shift to us seeing like Knights Templar fighting and wars, or the sex orgy and the cult, or whatever, what have you. The vast majority of these seem to be nothing more than like a need to have a budget to have these extensive sets and a little change up in things. They didn't offer any kind of relief from the boredom. They offered more of an annoyance of, good God, just get on with it. And so each, without exception, I think each time one of those little flashbacks occurred, my blood pressure just went up and I reached for a drink.
Fair. I will say that, so the worst part about this is that we went to find it, and it's only available for rental. So we went to Apple TV, and Moss was in charge of doing the controls to rent it, and he accidentally rented the extended version.
Oh, God.
Which it has an extra half hour. Oh, it's God. 3 hours long instead of 2.5. And we looked at each other and we're like, we cannot watch the extended version. We can't. I can't commit to 3 hours. 2.5 is already too many. And so then we paid $4 extra to rent the regular length version. And that is the one that we watched. But we double paid for this.
Wow. I'm sorry, Julie.
That's terrible.
The 2.5 hour felt like 3 hours, actually. I thought it was way longer than 2.5.
It felt like a century. I don't even know what extra 30 minutes of material would have been put into an extended version. I definitely don't want to know, though. Not going to find out.
I wonder if Jeff has seen the extended version.
Jeff Exelon?
Yeah.
Well, if Jeff is listening to this...
Didn't he say it was like a comfort viewing? Or...
Yeah, watch the extended cut.
So I can understand how this could be comfort viewing for someone who really just wants something kind of boring in the background. That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's not, it wouldn't be mine, but I can see how somebody who just wants to hear people inanely discuss symbology.
I mean,
this could be comforting.
It would be comforting if, like, it had, I think earlier you were right that, like, National Treasure should have been the model for this. Because it's just much more of a fun movie while still having some bonkers reveal. I think.
Yeah, and National Treasure is another Knights Templar movie.
It is, yeah. The Knights Templar are popular.
But it's much more fun.
It's way more fun. And utter
and
nonsense.
It does predate this, too, by 2 years.
Yeah.
I've actually never seen National Treasure. Maybe I should actually watch it.
It's very silly. It just knows that it's very silly, so it's not trying to be not silly.
Question. Did you watch the extended cut?
No, I did not. I watched the regular cut. We paid $4 extra so that we would not have to watch 30 extra minutes.
That's unfortunate, because you could have told me what the scenes were like when Sophie apparently threatens to destroy Da Vinci paintings in order to escape. Because they filmed them, and some of them were restored for the extended edition, which were not available technically in the U.S. and Canada. So I wonder if you might have had access to them. I don't know.
I don't know, but I mean, I'm not gonna watch the extended version to tell you.
I mean, I'm kind of curious now. Oh, good lord.
Yeah, but that's not going to make me waste three hours of my life on this movie again.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It would be funny, though. Yeah. Apparently, by the way, I believe Westminster would not let them film on location there. So they had to go to a different cathedral. And the reasoning was that the book is not theologically sound, to which I think the response I would have is, well, of fucking course it isn't. It's not purporting to be truth. It's fiction based on conspiracies.
But I mean, like, sure, if the church wants to say, like, no, this is, like, actually actively not true and we don't want it associated with our church. Okay.
I guess.
That's fair.
I feel like what would really happen is a bunch of people would go, whoa, is there like actually a conspiracy and a cult? And then they go look and go, no, but I just learned a whole lot about the church I didn't know before.
You're thinking about people actually doing research. That is not the typical moviegoer.
You're right. I'm living in the fantasy world in which academics from the humanities are considered sexy and inspiring. Like,
what I do when I watch movies where I'm just like, what? Where did they get this idea? Oh, from some guy who made it up in 1956 and then some other guy who decided to write something completely different from him in 1982, which is not even remotely the weird lies that the first guy was telling. But that's not normal. That is just me.
Oh, yeah, that would be me too, though. I'm the same type.
At least it didn't begin based on a true story. Or...
Oh, I hate when they say that and then you look it up and it's like, no, it's not. Like, based on a true story of a fantasy world, perhaps. So, Julia, you may appreciate this, but one of the trivia notes is that Fash, played by Jean Reno, his full name, the inspector's name, is Bezu Fash, which the trivia says translates roughly to angry fucker. I don't know if that's actually true, but that's kind of fun, if so.
Fashe is definitely angry.
Yes, yeah. And apparently there is also a gargoyle that Sophie looks at in the Roslyn Chapel that is modeled after Ron Howard's face.
Wow.
Cliff?
Ron. Cliff was busy doing... no, this is a little late for him to be doing Adam Sandler movies. Never mind.
I will say, like, one other thing that was actually fun to watch was the point where Sophie and Robert Langdon are trying to get away. They think they're going to the American embassy, so he'll be safe. But then they get there and the cops are there, so they have to quickly exit. And they're in a tiny smart car, and she, like, reverses her way through Parisian traffic to get them out of danger. And that sequence was actually kind of fun to watch.
That was pretty neat, yeah.
If the whole movie had been silly things like that, then I think we probably would have had a better time.
We would have, indeed. Well, that brings us to the big question today, which is, what are your final thoughts and grade? And so, Julia, you must give this a grade today. What is your final thought and grade? Go.
I mean, okay, the whole movie is very tiring, and I didn't love it. I don't love the evil albino stereotype. I felt like it was a real shame that they introduced Sophie as a cryptologist and then completely made her not actually solve any of the things and have all the guys who are teachers talk to each other about things and tell her about them and her act like she didn't know anything. All of that was frustrating. But I did enjoy watching Ian McKellen chew scenery, and it was not as angering to me as some of the other movies we have watched for torture cinema. It was just really boring. So with all of that in mind, I'm giving this movie a D.
Solid D. All right. Daniel, what about you?
I think this was probably one of the hardest, if not the hardest, torture cinema that I've had to watch. Just for the similar reasons of one, it was a movie that I knew about, knew a lot of background about, enough to know I never really wanted to watch it. And so then having to watch it made me sad. And the fact that I've seen worse movies by far, particularly in terms of like the competence of being made or the writing or the acting, etc. But at least they have something to them that I can get angry about or offended about, or at least they're interesting in some way. This had, it was just so bland and boring. And inane, handled badly, as we covered. And so overall, I agree, D.
Well, then it comes to me. obviously, this is not a good movie. I have seen it several times. I have watched it. I would not call it a comfort watch because it's too boring. But the scenery is nice. Ian McKellen's a lot of fun. And there are moments in this where I'm just like, wow, this is kind of a neat movie. There's some neat little moments. And then it's layered by annoying garbage. And so for that reason, like, it's not the worst thing we've ever covered, right? It's well shot. It maybe is a little boring. The acting is not always terribly great.
And you like the music. We never mentioned the Hans Zimmer.
I didn't want to sully his name by bringing him up again. Sorry. I would give it also a D. I don't think it rises to the kind of hatred that other films we've covered deserve, where it just makes you actively super angry, with the exception of me being annoyed by the ending. It is not, however, and I will mention this because I think it'll make Julia cringe, it is not a Transformers movie.
No, I honestly, that's one of the things that made me not give it an F. Like, it is not anything remotely as angering to me personally as some of the other things that we've watched.
This is the reason I did not put any Transformers on the poll, because I knew you were coming for this. And I was like, Julia will not do another Transformers movie.
I won't do it. I've opted out of all Transformers movies.
But they're all successful, and every single one of them shit. So, well, we did it. We made a whole show. Yay.
How many times has there been a unanimous grade?
Well, probably a few times. I used to keep a track of it all, but I'm not currently doing so.
Maybe Paul knows.
Paul knows everything because he's a...
Does he have an eidetic memory?
No, he just remembers everything he sees.
I still can't believe he said that. That's so stupid.
Oh, Lordy. Well, folks who are here, thanks everybody for showing up. Shan Monster and Knight KY who joined, and Killswitch was also here. Thank you for the follow, Knight KY. Appreciate it. But for folks that are here, it's a reminder, if you'd like to let us know what you thought, if there's any thoughts you have about this movie or other episodes, go to skiffyandfanny.com/listener. Suggestions, you can let folks know what you think. By folks, I mean us. We read them. You can also suggest topics, all that good stuff. You can follow us as Skiffy and Fanty on pretty much every social media site. We are primarily active on Mastodon, Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky. We're on Twitter, and we post up to Twitter, and we check mentions as on Twitter, but that's kind of the extent of our involvement there, because someone ruined it. So there's that. But you can find all of our stuff at our link tree. That's linktr.ee/skiffyandfanty. Everything's there. All of our Patreons, all that good stuff. There's a newsletter. There is a Patreon at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. Please give us reviews. If you like our show, go to iTunes, Podchaser, whatever place you know that you do, and leave us really long reviews so that we know that they're there and we can read them and we'll feel good inside. Me, I'm at SeanDuke.net. I'm Alphabet Streams on Twitch Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. I have a Patreon as well and all that good stuff. A lot of projects. Go to my Linktree, which is just /SeanDuke for Linktree, and you can find me.
And you can find me at reading1000lives.com or reading1000lives similarly on Blue Sky.
And I am at juliarios.com. That's my personal website, where I publish Worlds of Possibility, which is uplifting science fiction and fantasy stories. I also have my own podcast there, the OMG Julia podcast, where sometimes those stories are dramatized and other times I interview people about their creative process. And then on social media, you can usually find me as at OMG Julia or at ZOMG Julia. I'm ZOMG Julia on Instagram, but I'm OMG Julia on Blue Sky.
Perfect. Okie dokie. Well, as is required by the Skiffy and Fanty bylaws, I must make this awkward now. And so to do so, I will let everybody know that I am also starting a cult.
No.
It is called the Cult of Duke. As a requirement to join, you must read a minimum of 12 novels a year, 3 of which are selected personally by me and are designed to make you really angry. And the other 9 may be chosen by you or a family member, depending on whether or not you joined on an even or an odd day of the year, except every other Tuesday, in which case it's selected by a cow in Eastern Kentucky.
If we read them all, do we get our own personal pan pizza?
No. But I will bring hot dogs.
Is this a happy...
Worst cult ever. I'm not joining.
You're not joining. And on that note, awkward ending ends. If you want to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty or skiffyandfanty.com, our website, where you can get access to all of our fancy things. Our music comes from Holy Mole. You can support him and his work at patreon.com/holymole. Thank you for listening.